Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Shop all things Cherry Johnson at TheRealCherry.com.
Welcome to Cherry's World Podcast. I am Cherry Johnson. My co-host is Mr. Courtney Blackman, and today we will be talking to a lifelong friend of mine, well, kind of. Her name is Amy Brodnick, and Amy found out the hard way what it was like to grow up as a ward of the court and to do 2 separate bids in juvenile detention centers in Texas. I need to let you know that today's content is for mature audiences only, so if you have little ones, you might want to pause or send them on out of the room. Or come back to us later. But if you have teenage daughters, you definitely would like to sit them down and watch this show with them, because it's all about what happens when you have the wrong friends and how you can get caught up and become guilty by association and end up with a life that you could never even have a nightmare about. So grab a seat and get ready, because this show is heavy.
The only podcast coming through your beat stereo is Cherry's World, so let's go around like a merry-go. Plug your phone in, make sure it got a full battery. Download it Wednesday, listen to it Saturday. She cover all topics, whatever you after. She got ballplayers, authors, doctors, actors, rappers, singers, entrepreneurs, divas, leaders, Androids or Apple, turn up your speakers. Trying to shoot my shot like the vaccine, whether it's Cherry or Maxine, whether the podcast or acting, she that queen. PYT, you know what that mean. So you on TV and touch the screen, touch on you. I plead Lucy's got a crush on you. It'll mean the world to get a blush from you. Teaspoon to me, leave you sleep like Robitussin do.
I told people that if they have a teenage daughter, they need to sit her down and they need to watch this show with her. Can you tell us, because I was listening to your story and I read your story and I know your story from you. You don't seem like really far off from me or a lot of women that I know, except for, I don't know, were you claiming to be a gang member? But I know, oh, my dress is all crooked. I know that we all know gang members and bad boys, especially pretty girls. Mm-hmm. And we end up hanging out with them. So were you really that far gone or?
Man, when I was young, I did. You know, I was running with the people in the gangs. It's heavy in San Diego. I was out riding around in cars with gang members when I was 13, 14 years old.
What is riding around in cars with gang members? Because I'm Black, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. My cousins were gang members and I was riding around in cars with them too.
Yeah.
But were you active in the gang life? Because I wasn't active, but
I wasn't active. It was always, like what you said, it was always the men. It was always the men that I messed around with when I was young that were doing the gang activity. And I was just there.
Pretty girl caught up.
Right.
And can you tell us about the pretty girl caught up story? Like what happened with you? What led you to doing your first bid in juvenile hall?
Well, I think coming from a broken home, like a lot of us, my story is so similar to a lot of other women out there. I came from a broken home. My parents, when they were younger, were on drugs. I think that contributed to me running to the streets for love and affection and attention when I was younger, because I couldn't get it at home because my parents were going through their own things. So I lived with my mom most of the time when I was younger, and, you know, she was on cocaine, working three jobs, you know, trying to take care of everybody. She didn't really, get her life together until after mine was already a mess. Mm-hmm. But everything had its purpose. Everything that I went through, everything my mom went through, all had its purpose, because she is a completely different person now. And without her, I wouldn't be here today.
Absolutely. And so, guilty by association, Courtney, I don't know if you got to know any part of Amy's story, but Amy was out with her friends. One of her friends shot somebody and her little butt was in a mix. Mm-hmm. And what happened after that, Amy?
We became targets for the police department in that town. Anytime they seen us out anywhere, we became an immediate, you know, factor. You know, what are they up to? Let's go see what they're doing. All of my friends that were there that night, we all ended up going to jail. My friend Daryl, he ended up going to jail for 2 years behind that incident. Thank God the man that he shot didn't die. That man, I believe, ended up paralyzed, though. And that was a really sad situation, because it was something that didn't have to happen at all. None of us even expected that. But everybody in our circle of friends ended up in prison one way or another.
What did you actually do time for?
I did time. You know what? I did time because I honestly, I needed mental health treatment. I needed behavioral health and mental health treatment, but I got shoved into the juvenile justice system. I think that's the lack of what our systems appropriately do for juveniles that need mental health or behavioral health treatment. They just locked us up. I think I was one of those juveniles that I just got shoved into the system because the system didn't have the appropriate care that I needed. And they still don't to this day. There's so many kids that get shoved into juvenile justice systems that need mental health and behavioral health treatment. They don't need prison or jail.
And your first bid was done in Texas, right? What was the name of the detention center?
I went to Texas Youth Commission, and that was Brownwood State School. That's where I went the first time.
And that was a co-ed school at the time, right?
Yes, that was a co-ed school.
What do you think about young girls and young boys being kind of locked up in a detention center together?
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I used to have male staff members let boys into the bathrooms when I was going to the bathroom. It's horrible. They shouldn't do it. There were boys in there for raping people. Jeez. The guards would let the boys' staff in there when I am trying to go to the bathroom, and I'd have to negotiate, please don't, you know, I'm not the one you want to be with right now, you know? It was hard. And then the staff would deny it and make us feel like we're lying, and we just feel so trapped and didn't, like, how are we supposed to argue with these guards and staff trying to tell people, hey, this is going on, and nobody's believing us.
So I'm sorry, Courtney, I'm not trying to monopolize it, but I just want to get these important questions really quickly. How long was your first bid at that detention center?
9 months.
And was there sexual abuse while you were there to yourself? Did you suffer such at the hands of other, do you call juveniles inmates? Was it the hands
of
other
juvenile? Oh, yeah. My gosh. I was beat up because I didn't want to date a girl. You know, I was beat up because I didn't want to date a girl, but I had to just, you know, you have to toughen up and let them know, you know. I didn't expect everything I went through in there, but it definitely opened my eyes.
So your sexual assaults in that detention center, were mm-hmm. they other inmates or other inmates and guards?
Inmates and guards. Yeah. Every juvenile. Yeah. Every single juvenile facility, something happened. Every single one.
You got questions, Courtney? Or you just...
I really just have a comment right now. It's funny. I was telling somebody that the American economy is based off of criminal activity. You know, that's the reason why you never hear about lawyers or even guards having layoffs. You know what I mean? Because it's set up. The system is set up based on crime. It's based on crime. You figure there's nowhere in America where a car can go 120 miles an hour, but every car you get is 100 goes 140, 160 miles per hour, and the speed limit is only 80, you know, 85. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like the American economy is based off of you trying to get away with something, and the police trying to catch you, and the FBI investigating you. I tell my kids the same thing. I'm like, this is a game. It's a chess game that they have created. And I hate to sound woke to my kids, but it's like, yo, it's what it is. It's a game that they're trying to play. And you can easily, by making the wrong decision or getting in the wrong car, be part of their game. And they won't give you no help. You just end up being a tax write-off for them in their system. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Because the detention centers that you were put in are private, or at that time, I know that one has been repurchased by somebody else, but at that time, they're private facilities. So these are private prisons making money off of juveniles.
Yep. Right. Because the states don't want to take the time or say they have the resources or money to run them. And these private companies come in and say that they can do it for less, but at what cost? And it's still not working.
So the first time you were in there, did you serve all 9 months?
Yes.
Okay. So you, I don't know, what is it called when they let you out?
You get released.
Okay. You got released. So tell us what happened after you got released.
After I got released, I went to California. I was in Texas. I went back home to California, and I was doing okay for a while. But my mother and I had more problems, which resulted in me running away again back to Texas. And I ended up back in juvenile hall.
What was the incident that landed you to do the second bid in a different facility this time?
Just violating my probation and leaving the state. They put me back in there for another 9 months.
How did they know that you left the state?
I was in high school. I was gone. I left school. My mom let them know. I just ran away again. I was like, forget it. It was my home wasn't fixed yet. You know, they kept trying to fix me, but they weren't fixing my home. My home is what needed to be fixed.
So basically, violation of the probation and truancy.
Yes.
Is what landed you back into juvenile. Okay. So the second detention center that you were put in has been renamed now. It's not even the same place anymore.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's open anymore. I haven't even looked it up.
I looked it up. I know what the man who owned it died, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was supposedly repurchased in 2000. I don't know if it's open now, though. Can you tell us what was the name of it then?
Then it was the Colk County Juvenile Justice Center in Bront, Texas.
Okay.
That's what it was called. The Colk County Juvenile Justice Center in Bront, Texas, had contracted with Texas Youth Commission to house female juvenile delinquents. And it was supposed to be an amazing luxurious facility that was supposed to fix all the little girls in our problems. That's what they told our parents.
And this is where the nightmares truly started. Like, even though you had survived the sexual abuse in the first one, the sexual abuse and the abuse in this one were intensive.
Yes. This was more so guards at this facility.
You were underage too, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. 14, 15. There were girls younger than me there. There was an 11-year-old there too. I remember. I couldn't even understand why an 11-year-old was there. And they used to keep her in a locked room where you had to, you know, open it up with a key. And they kept that 11-year-old little girl in that room. And I don't even remember her name. I'm hoping that these videos that I'm starting to do now will help connect me to some of the girls that I was in there with so that we can reconnect. You know, it's, I've been connecting with some of the girls, but I hope these videos help me reach more of them.
I hope they do too. And if they reach out to Cherry's World Podcast, I will definitely do everything I can to get you in contact with them. I want to talk about how you said that you guys were told that this facility was like the dream place for you to be and how they cracked your spirit your first 2 days there.
Oh, can you tell that story to Courtney? Yes. Our first, like, they hyped us up about going to this place and they got us all excited, even said the food was good. All that was a lie. It was cafeteria style prison food, which was horrible. And they invited us in and it was a brand new facility. Everything was nice and shiny. And they handed us paintbrushes and they told us that we could paint our rooms, our cells, however we wanted. And that really lit us up. We were so happy to be able to try to create a safe space and a creative environment that would allow us to heal. You know, being creative helps people heal in so many ways. And, you know, they told us we could paint our rooms. So can you believe that all these hardcore juvenile delinquent girls, we were painting hearts and butterflies and beautiful things on our cell walls. And then the next day they came in and they told us whoever gave us permission to do that gave us wrong information and they made us repaint the walls white. And we were so sad. I mean, it was like they crushed our spirit. It's like it was, I don't know why they would have done that. It was like they were trying to break us. Mm-hmm. That's what they were doing. They were trying to break us and they did.
So day two, you were, I was a teenage girl. I wanted to paint my room too, and my mama wouldn't let me. So I could just imagine if I got to do it the way I wanted to, and she would have came and maybe painted back white. I'd have been hurt.
Yes, it was horrible. I mean, that was we were painting outside. We couldn't see outside. So we were painting flowers and grass and, you know, like we were pretending that we were creating our own outside in our room. And then they took it away.
How long were you there before the abuse started? But that was already mental abuse, but before the physical abuse started?
About 2 or 3 months. 2 or 3 months went by. And then that's when the guards were starting to get more comfortable with us. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, we would get mail or letters from our little boyfriends on the outside, the guys, the guards would read through our mail and then they would start making comments. And then that's how I believe that they started to figure out which girls they wanted to target, because the girls who were talking sexual in letters must have knew what they were talking about and they wanted to see. So that's when, you know, we started getting harassed and, you know, hey, let me see this or do this, or if you want your level, do this, or if you want some McDonald's or some outside food, do this, you know. And, you know, a bunch of abused girls in that kind of a situation being told to just do this by people that were supposed to be above us. We just did what they wanted us to do. We were used to being abused anyway. So it just was normal.
Are these female guards or are these male guards?
Male guards.
They have male guards in a little girl's facility.
Yeah. And some of these male guards were barely just to turn 21 themselves. And they were from little bitty towns where education's low. There's not much going on. And these are bored men that are from little bitty towns. And, you know,
a predator's playground.
Exactly.
Little girls with no voices.
Right.
I want to get personal. If it gets too personal, you tell me you don't want to go into details, and I'm okay with that. Okay. But I think it's important for our viewers to know how extensive the abuse was. Was it actual intercourse?
I didn't have actual intercourse. I was fondled and kissed and rubbed on and stuff like that.
Not that that's okay.
Right.
That's not okay. That doesn't make it any better.
Right. Oh yeah. No, I know. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, but my roommate, my cellmate was the one that was heavily abused. So much so that they had her on birth control. And I was terrified of the guard that had a liking to her. And because of that guard, that's why I didn't come out of my room at night to even go to the bathroom, because you had to pass the guard station to go to the bathroom. And if he was there, I would just hold my pee all night because I was not about to let him touch me or even look at me. So I would do whatever I had to do to not have to make my way to the bathroom. And my roommate would always... it was like she sacrificed herself to save other girls.
Sarah, right? I'm sorry, honey. Courtney, I'm just going to let you know, Sarah, the girls all did a lawsuit after they were released. They took a settlement that they wouldn't take today if they would have known any better. It was $200,000 each, right?
Hey, you got to say, and start over.
I'm sorry. I said, I'm just going to say Sarah was the name of her cellmate. The girls, when they were released, they did a lawsuit. I believe there was 11 of them, mm-hmm. and they settled for $200,000 each. Mm-hmm. Sarah was upset because she didn't want money. She wanted an apology. And the day they won the trial, Sarah took her own life. Mm-hmm. And that was Amy's roommate. I'm so sorry, Amy. Amy,
$200,000, that's all they gave?
That's all they gave us. That's it.
That's crazy.
But it was gone. We didn't even get that much, though, because the lawyers got half of that. And then whatever else. There were so many fees. By the time I got my money, it was only like $100,000 something, barely.
What people don't know, when the United States government gives you money, you have to pay for the transaction fees. For them to give you money, even if it's just your money back. I know that from when they took my money, mm-hmm. when my money was wrongfully taken. I had to pay transaction fees for the United States government to give me back my money. So you said that you were fondled and yes. things like that. Were you forced to give fellatio? Or I kind of just want people to have a picture. I'm sorry.
Yeah. The only thing about this particular guard at that facility that bothered me was he forced me to give him my mother and grandmother's address. He wanted to know where I was being released to, where I was going. He was telling me he was going to leave his family and come out to California and be with me. And his wife was calling up there harassing me, asking me, why am I ruining her husband's life when I was not doing anything? It was not me that was doing this. It was, he's the one that dropped the love. Excuse me. He's the one that dropped the letter in town that a coworker found. And that's how everybody even found out about what was going on there. Because, again, we were just doing what we wanted, what we had to do to get home. We were doing whatever they wanted us to do.
She kind of skipped over it a little bit. Amy, I'm just going to go back for you. Okay. I was asking about the sexual, advances and the assault that happened towards her. She skipped it over and said, what really bothered me was because as an abused person, it hurts to relive those memories. But he told her that he would kill her sister and kill her grandmother and kill her mother if she ever told what happened to her while she was there. So he was threatening her. but she had a guard who was completely infatuated with her, wrote a love letter to her and dropped it in the store. Somebody found the letter at the store and took it to the detention center themselves because it was so bothersome. Mm-hmm. And took it to, I don't know if it was like a PO or the director of the center, right?
Yeah, it was the director of the facility.
And what happened when they got that letter, the director of the facility called you in, right?
Yeah, they come and they restrain me like I did something wrong. And I was a model inmate. I didn't do anything for anybody to, you know, I didn't break the rules, you know, I followed the rules they set for me. But they restrained me, brought me to the officer or the director's office. And then she started just drilling me and making me feel bad and telling me all these things about why am I ruining this man's life. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I didn't know anything. Then I find out later that they found the letter, that somebody dropped a letter, that he dropped a letter and she read it to me. And in that letter is when it said that he, you know, he was wanting my addresses, where I'm going to, he was going to leave his family and all this stuff. And I, in order to not be hurt forcefully, what I did is I just played along with him wanting to be my boyfriend while I was locked up. That's what I did. I didn't want to be hurt. I didn't want to be forcefully hurt. So I gave him kisses, hugged him, touched him, let him touch me, you know, things like that. But he never raped me. But the other guard, Sarah used to call him Pizza Face because that's what his face looked like. She would keep him busy at night to save anybody else from getting abused.
And how old were y'all?
14, 15, 13.
Damn. It's almost like I'm at a loss. I have so much to say and nothing to say at all because I'm a mother. Mm-hmm. So the anger in me is building up inside of me that these are grown men. And these are men that you're, as a parent, you're thinking, maybe this is going to save my kid's life, right? Because my kid is mm-hmm. going down the wrong track. Maybe this will make her turn around and see life a different way and want to get out and go the straight and narrow. This is like a cry out to parents. Do not leave the state to raise your children.
Nope.
No.
Nobody can raise your child better than you can raise your child. Okay, so let's talk about your release, right? Mm-hmm. You did 9 months this time as well.
Yeah, I did 9 months that time, and they didn't release me back to my family. I actually got released to a girls' home in Houston, Texas, in Third Ward, and it was called Nikki's Girls' Home. And at that time, I was pretty much on my own. The Nikki's Girls Home was a transitional living house for girls who had been in the system that wanted to do independent living, you know, and I thought that was great because obviously it wasn't working back home. You know, again, I was scared that if I went back home, something, you know, me and my mom weren't going to get along again or something was going to happen that was going to put me back in a situation where I ended up incarcerated. And so I ended up going to Nikki's Girls Home. But while I was at the girls' home, I found out that I was pregnant. And then a whole nother situation happened after the fact. But with me being a ward of the state, I had to do everything I possibly could to prove that I could keep my baby. And I did. I did whatever I could to keep my baby. Pregnant, walking around in Third Ward at 15, 16 years old, working at Popeye's Chicken, frying chicken till the day I had my baby, just to prove to these people that I could keep a job and be a mother to my daughter. And I was able to do that.
your daughter's father was not somebody who worked at the home.
Right? No, no, he was not. He was my childhood sweetheart, my love growing up. Really, you know, my life has been plagued by incarceration. My daughter's father, 1 month after my daughter was born, my friend who shot somebody in front of us was in the car with him and his girlfriend. My daughter's father was driving. He was drunk. That car ended up in an accident. And Daryl, the guy who shot that guy in front of us, ended up flying out of the car and dying that night. And so did his girlfriend. And my daughter's father ended up going to prison for 20 years for intoxication manslaughter. So I went directly from being, you know, I got out and, you know, got pregnant, and then my daughter's father went in. And then I was left all by myself with a baby in third ward.
Wow. So you were able to raise your daughter, mm-hmm. get out of the system, and now she's doing well, y'all. But
I'm doing better. I'm doing better.
You're doing better. Were you able to ever get some help, like some mental help, some counseling while you were raising your baby?
Lots of it. I got lots of counseling. That's what's helped me this far. But, Sherry, it doesn't stop there. It does not stop there. I wanted to tell you that I named my daughter Sarah after my friend Sarah. My daughter's name is Sarah. And my own daughter, because of everything I had been through, I had become an advocate for criminal justice system issues. I had a magazine back in the day called Inmate and Family Magazine. I had an online presence. I used to go march and help try to change laws and write bills and do some amazing things. All while I was raising my daughter, you know, fighting for criminal justice system issues because her father was incarcerated. And then sadly, my daughter started to go through some of the same issues that I did when I was a teenager. I was trying to do everything I could to not have her go down that path. But she went from being Miss Teen San Diego County to now my daughter is in prison. My own daughter has been in prison since 2015. Hopefully she's coming home this October. And she's in prison because her best friend killed her drug dealing rapist. So my own daughter, it's a cycle I'm trying to break. And I feel like because I've been so hush hush about these bad things and these miscarriages of the system that I've been through, I'm doing a disservice to people by not sharing my story, because more people need to hear my story so that the system can be improved. Somehow my daughter got caught up in it and ended up in the system just like I did, but she went to real prison as soon as she turned 18 years old. And, it was really even more sad is that my daughter and her father have only touched each other through prison doors. Like they got to hold hands once through a prison door. And my daughter went to prison 6 months before her dad got out of his 20-year sentence. So it's insane that I've been literally plagued by incarceration. And I've been so afraid to talk about these things because they are shameful. It's embarrassing. It's vulnerable. People need to know how serious of a problem incarceration and recidivism is so that we can really put an end to it. Out of all these bad things that have happened, good things are happening too. I feel like I am a change maker, and the people that I do get the opportunity to share my story with, I do inspire them to keep going. And I need to just be comfortable telling more people so that I can help more people, because I didn't go through these things to not help someone else. So I know that's a lot.
It is a lot. Mike, I have two questions for you. One, are you and your daughter's father back together now that he's home?
I married him when he got out. We got married when he got out. And 2 years after that, it just, I kept trying and trying. And I believe he has post-incarceration syndrome, which is PTSD for people that have been in prison. Yeah. He's paranoid. He thinks everybody's out to get him. And he's very competitive, and he thinks I'm trying to run his life when I'm just trying to guide him, you know. And I had to give him some space to do what he has to do, so he can grow into a man out here, because he never had that opportunity. We're still married, but we've been separated since 2018.
Thank you for sharing that, because that's something intimate, but I don't think that people think about that. The rehabilitation of family once incarceration is involved is something that's never talked about.
Never. And let me tell you this, I never thought it would happen to me. And I used to always go around talking to people about this. I used to speak at Mothers Against Drunk Driving meetings. And sadly, I used to always tell people, 80% of children who have an incarcerated parent end up in prison themselves. I never thought that it would be my daughter. And it is.
I know those are the hardest conversations that you have with her while she's behind those walls.
Yes.
Do you get to speak with her on a regular basis?
Yes. She calls all the time. She calls all the time. The first few years was really hard. It was so rough. She was suicidal. Women in there are very mean. It's not a place for a young girl to go at all. And she was so naive to the real world. I tried to shelter her and protect her, but she had to grow up in there. And she is a little dynamite woman now. I love her to death. She sometimes counsels me, you know. She's my best friend. My daughter is my best friend. She helped raise me. I without my mother and without my daughter, I wouldn't be who I am today. And I can't wait for my daughter to come home, because I know she has a great life ahead of her, and that there's purpose in all of this. There's purpose in all of this for our entire family. And
are we able to show her picture? Can we put her picture?
Yes. Yes.
I'll play it. How much longer does she have to go before she comes home?
Hopefully in October, she'll be coming home. I'm working on a project right now. I tag a lot of her old pictures, Saving Sarah project, because that's what I'm doing. Like right now, it's all about saving Sarah. I'm saving Sarah, and that's the project I'm working on. You know, she is a project. My daughter is a project.
Of course. You know,
it takes a lot of my time, effort, and energy. And even for her dad, too, it's been a real something a lot of people didn't realize, and something I was very upset about. And I don't know if anyone that watches this video might share this, too, but it was very hard on my daughter's father when our daughter went to prison. It made us both feel like a big failure. And it hurts him so bad that even though he did 20 years, and even though me and my daughter broke our backs to do whatever we could to keep money on his books, he can't even bring himself to write her letters. And it's sad because she needs him. But that's part of his pain and part of what he still hasn't healed from. He can't even go visit her. It hurts him too bad. And at first I hated him. I was like, how can you not be here for her when you went through all of this? And I have to remember that he's gone through a lot of traumas in there as well. And it's hard for him to understand or even fathom that his own daughter ended up in there too.
You know, it's crazy. I was telling some kids, my kids too, that, and I heard this, and you tell me if you agree, but they said, like, when the kids take a test, this some kind of standardized test in school, the system looks at these numbers, and they start building prison cells based on these numbers. This is what I heard.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it at all. You know what? You'd be surprised if you look at some of our favorite influencers and our favorite people, that they invest in the prison system.
Give me some of our favorite.
Man, I would want to put myself on blast.
Is Michael Jordan one of them?
No.
That was a lie?
That's another Michael Jordan.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Give me another one.
I've been a target. I don't, I'm tired of being a target.
I hear you.
But
whisper to me, I'll say it.
All right. We'll look it up. You know what? That's something we can look up and put a list out there and show people who invest in prison systems. Why don't people invest in treatment? Let me tell you why my daughter ended up in prison. I tried to put my daughter in 7 different rehab centers, and we had TRICARE through the military insurance. We had TRICARE. They would not approve a residential treatment stay for my daughter. A drug dealer got my daughter hooked on crack.
Damn, that's what I'm gonna ask.
She was working. I thought it would be a good idea for her to stay busy after school and get a job at Sonic. Yeah. What did she do while she got that job at Sonic? Met a drug dealer who kept coming by, giving her drugs and big tips. And then before I knew it, my daughter's running away with the drug dealer. Now the drug dealer's dead and my daughter's in prison. And I tried to get the police to arrest him and lock him up and get him off the streets. He had 14 cocaine felonies already. His brother was a bail bondsman who's known for sleeping with women to get him out of jail who don't have money. And he was, and the guy who's deceased now was a low-level drug informant for the area. So he was already working with the police, and they didn't care that he was raping my daughter. And now he's dead. My daughter's in prison.
Wow. So it seems like it was all like a setup.
Yeah, he was an informant.
Okay. I got a stupid question, but I really want to ask this, and it don't even have to be for the show, because I got a daughter and I got a wife, and this stuff means something to me. So after all that abuse, I know, and I hope this don't sound stupid, that's why I said it's not even for the show, I just curious, after all that abuse in that prison, how did you even, like, man, how did you even want to have sex to even have the baby? That sounds stupid, Cherry. I'm sorry.
I get it. Because the love for my daughter's father was always already there. And I would run back to him for comfort. He was who comforted me. He's who protected me from my mom when me and my mom would get into fights.
I understand that love, but I'm talking about the touch. Like, if he did that ever remind you of whatever went on in there? Like, how do you get intimate with someone and then after being abused the same way? I don't know. I'm just trying to figure it out.
You know what? I'm about to share a vulnerable truth with you guys that I don't think I've ever shared with much of anybody.
Do you want this for the show or not? Because I don't have to be.
I will say this for the show. I've been molested by white men and Hispanic men as a young girl. And as an adult, I can't date a white or Hispanic man. I've stuck with African-American men my whole life because they didn't abuse me when I was young. And people always ask me, why do you not like white guys? Why do you not date other than black guys? You know, why do you always date black guys? Because when I was young, the black guys didn't abuse me. It was the white men and the Mexican men that abused me. And inside myself, I just can't bring myself to want to even be sexual with a white man or a Hispanic man.
See, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Courtney, you know, most people who are hypersexual or provocative in their teen years, it's because there was some kind of molestation or abuse, or there was a predator in their life. So the people that are out there having the most sex most of the time in their early years, it's because they were abused.
No, I get that. But what I guess it was just hard for me to understand until she explained it. You know, like, I guess after being 9 months abused, sexually abused, the last thing I would be thinking about would be sex, you know, but.
Well, it wasn't 9 months. It was 18 months because it was two separate times.
Wow. Yeah. So I just wanted to know how that worked, but now I understand, you know, certain people.
It does. It took a lot of healing. And now as a woman who's gone through a lot of therapy, I have a different level of compassion for people. I love on a different level. All my connections have to be mental. I get real turned off when people are just hypersexualized. But I'm also in an industry, career-wise, that has always been full of hypersexual activity and other things.
What industry?
Yeah, I was going to say, tell them what you do. Tell them what you do.
Okay, so now I kind of do two things. I'm in the mortgage business, but I've always been in the music business as well. So moving to Atlanta, I was able to, everybody I know that loves me told me, you need to go to Atlanta because Atlanta is where you can be everything that you are. So I moved to Atlanta to be everything that I am. And it's been rough because they're really cliquish out here. They're cliquish. But I'm able to do both my music and my mortgages. I work for a record label out of Houston, Texas, the Chop Not Slop label with OG Ron C and the Chop Stars. I'm a business development manager and I help get new contracts and bring new business to the table for events and sponsors and things like that. And I also do mortgages for people that have creative income. Ever since I was young, I've been trying to get my friends in the music industry to understand how important it is to invest in homes instead of the other things they were doing. Nobody wanted to listen to me, but now we're in a financial literacy movement and there's an awakening in the world right now within the urban culture. And now my friends are like, hey, remember when you were telling me how to flip houses and how to do all this other stuff? And so now it's finally starting to all come together. And I really pride myself in being somebody that people know for a fact. I've been here to support entertainers and DJs my whole life, strippers too. They need houses. Whatever it is you want to do in life, you need a stable foundation in order for you to be able to focus on your craft full time without having to worry about if your rent's going to be paid or not. And rent keeps going up. Mm-hmm. So I'm so blessed that out of everything I've been through, somehow it got me here and I'm doing what I love.
And a lot of people don't understand that entertainers were paid different because we don't get a paycheck every 2 weeks. It's a lot harder for us to go in a bank and get a loan because we might get a lump sum, but they like seeing a steady flow of cash in and out, in and out, in and out. We don't always have that unless we're taught how to play the game. So we need to do things like, what is it called? Bank statement loans and things like that so that we can get a mortgage because we can't just walk in a regular mortgage company and get a mortgage like everybody else.
Yeah. So I pride myself in being someone that does mortgages for creatives. You know, there was so many people that are in entertainment, even film crew members, they get 1099s too. They couldn't even refinance the homes that they already own after COVID, you know, because we can't accept unemployment as a form of income. So there were so many people that wanted to buy houses that couldn't and even refinance the houses that they had when rates were amazingly low because they were laid off during COVID. And
it's if hard. Somebody wants to reach out to you, because I know my industry homies is going to be like, yo, how I get in touch with Amy?
Yay, please do.
For your services.
Yes. Oh, well, I am on the internet. You can find me on Instagram. At the_mortgage_mermaid, or you can just Google my name, Amy Broadnix, and I'm sure my LinkedIn will come up.
And we're going to attach all that stuff in there because I want them to know how to find you.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
You're welcome, Ruski. What else you got for Court?
So how did you, what made you even want to, like, how'd you even go from what the situation you were in to situation we're in now? Like, what was the turnaround for you?
In 2018, when it didn't work out with me and my dad, my daughter's father, I tried to commit suicide. I did. I actually died. The hospital was going to take me off life support. And the only reason that I am alive is because my mother did not allow them to. And thank God I started to breathe and everything on my own. 4 days later, Even though they told my mom that I wasn't going to make it, I made it. And I think I died to everything in my past that during that time. When I woke up and realized that I was alive, I had a talk with God in my head. I couldn't even speak. I tried to speak to people and they said it was just gibberish. Nobody could understand what I was saying. But I was telling people, oh my God, you know, there really must be some purpose for my life. I'm here for a reason. I am not dead. I cannot believe I'm here. And I was so upset with myself, but I knew that I had purpose and I had to be here. And that's when I decided that I have this thing on my wall here. It says, I can and I will. Watch me. And when people don't understand why my fight is so hard, it's because I've been through things that other people haven't been able to survive. And so when I come to people with ideas or when I come to people with solutions and they tell me that can't be done, can't isn't something that's in my vocabulary. I have that crazy faith kind of stuff going on because I've been blessed by the crazy faith. I'm still here and I shouldn't be. And I know it's because I make a difference. I'm supposed to be here, not just for myself. I really feel like my purpose is to be here to help other people's lives be better. And that's what I'm here for. I get so I know I'm saving lives. I know I'm saving lives because people who I've saved lives, they come to me and they tell me I've saved their life. That's my reward. That's why I'm here. That's my I'm not here for me. I'm here for others. And that's what I do know.
When are you writing your book?
Soon. I should soon. I've been writing. I have been writing, I've been afraid to say all these things. I've been afraid, and I'm finally coming out of my shell. And I think I definitely owe the world a book because my story is important. And I don't ever want anybody to forget about Sarah Lowe or the girls in the Cook County Juvenile Justice Facility or the boys and girls who are still incarcerated now that are being molested, raped, and abused. I want to share all these issues that I faced as a mother with a daughter who had a drug problem because my daughter shouldn't have never been to prison. She needed residential drug treatment and the insurance company would not approve it. And so before I die, one thing I want to do is I want to get a federal bill passed that forces drug treatment, residential drug treatment for anyone under the age of 25. Because if scientists can say, and they've said to us, they've proven that a brain isn't fully developed until age 25, then why the heck haven't all these insurance companies paid for residential drug treatment for children or anyone under the age of 25? Why are they sending people to prison under the age of 25 who needed mental health treatment?
Wow.
You know,
I'm going to put you on the spot because I didn't know that you've been writing, but I teach this class, right, about like how to write a book in 30 days.
Oh, my God.
What if you and I go through the exercises and get that book done?
I would love to. I would love to.
Will you come back when it's available and we'll talk about it?
Yes, ma'am.
I got it on record. So okay. I got backup.
You know what? I just needed encouragement and help. I needed encouragement and help. Even people in my own family that know what I've been through are embarrassed to hear me talk about these things. You know, they look at it as something that's embarrassing, not a strength. And I'm having to force myself to understand that it takes strength to be this vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I want to be, I'm putting myself out here so that like what you said in the beginning, we got to warn our young moms and the daughters out there, you know, these places that say they help your kids, they don't help your kids.
Hey, can I ask you a question about that? Cause like it's no way that you could have just like a doctor couldn't have just did it, wrote it out anyway. And then, you know, I mean, can't go to jail for not paying a medical bill.
Yeah. Well, for the residential treatment stays, the facilities that my daughter was at all wanted to verify through the insurance that a residential treatment stay was approved. And the max that they ever approved my daughter for was, I believe, in 90 days.
Now, what kind of
other than that, it was 30. TRICARE through the military. TRICARE for life. My ex-husband was in the Navy. I did end up getting married. That didn't work out. And then that's why I waited on my daughter's father to get out of prison, because I wasn't going to be walking around with 2-3 baby daddies.
So you were under their insurance, under military insurance. Yeah. So don't the military have facilities too?
Not like that. They do for like veterans.
Yeah,
but for veterans, they do, but not for children. You know, they had insurance, and the insurance would never approve, no matter how hard I fought for her to get a residential 6 to 9 month treatment. They would never approve it. They only did 30 days at a time. And my daughter went through so many unbelievable things. I really am mad. I'm mad.
For real.
At the insurance companies.
For real.
Mad.
That's another scam part of the game, you know. It's like insurance. They're all people just this it's a big game. It's all it is, a big game.
It is.
They make you pay all that money for insurance, and then when you need them, you know, you use them too many times, they'll drop you.
Right.
It's bullshit. I'm sorry you had to go through all that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I love both you guys for being so candid, so honest, and so pure. Amy, thank you so much for being vulnerable.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for just being honest and pure and telling your story.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
You know, I realized, though, all those years that I kept all of these things away from people, I didn't feel like I was getting all the success that I should have gotten. But lately, I've been being me 100% of the time, wherever I go. And crazy things are starting to happen. You know, things are starting to work out for me, because I feel like everybody's so focused on being perfect and hiding what's really going on. Mm-hmm. Being vulnerable and putting myself out there, letting people know that I've been somewhere where most people wouldn't even be able to pull themselves out of, is making people feel more comfortable about coming to me and sharing with me the things they've been through that have prevented them from being successful in their life, whether it be financial or career or whatever, or even with their daughters. I just had another incident with one of my friends who had an incident with her daughter in a daycare facility. So, I mean, there's, as moms, everybody, we need to communicate more. We need to talk more. Mm-hmm. We need to share all of these things that go wrong wherever they happen, so that we can start fixing them and quit sweeping them under the rug, because we all have a lot more in common than we think.
And please don't let those imperfect people make you feel that you're not perfect, because you are imperfectly you.
Thank you.
Okay. And I love you, and I'm proud of you, and you damn sure inspire me.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
Heard across the world. Welcome to Cherry's world. Heard across the world. Welcome to Cherry's world. Representing for every girl. Welcome to Cherry's world. Representing for every girl. Welcome to Cherry's world.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.